cartoons from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! What a cartoon! What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to What a Cartoon, where it's always ice to see you. I am your host, Vendetta Haver, Bob Mackey, and this is an audio exploration of every cartoon ever. Who is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I never feel a warm summer breeze on my face.
Should kill about that. Who else?
Frosted Dome, Matt J.
Wow. So this is our inaugural episode of the What a Cartoon podcast.
Welcome!
Yes, welcome, and thank you for checking it out.
I hope you guys enjoyed the Hot Dad theme song that opened it up here.
Yeah.
It will be stuck in your brain forever.
That's cool.
That's our plan.
Thank you.
But in case you don't know, this is our new podcast. We are the Talking Simpsons Guys. And this new series will be every week a different episode of a different cartoon. And this first episode and all the rest will be free on our new feed. You're probably listening to this on the Talking Simpsons feed right now. And if you like this episode, if you go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, the second episode is right there, right now, waiting for you. It's waiting for you. Pick up the phone.
Because we're following the same format we have with Talking Simpsons as well, of there's the free feed, but a week early and ad-free on the Patreon, we will be releasing every What a Cartoon. And we really wanted to do this because we love talking about The Simpsons in detail, but I just love that style of analysis so much and love so many different cartoons. It would be great for us to do it for multiple shows. Mm-hmm. But we can't just do every episode of a show.
Like, we would love to.
Yes.
Of every show.
There's just not enough hours in the day.
But one more thing about the Patreon. So today is Monday. On Friday, we'll be launching Talking Futurama. You can find the first episode of that for free also in the Talking Simpsons feed. But just like this podcast, if you go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, the second episode will also be there only on Patreon. And then every other episode of Talking Futurama will only be on Patreon. That's only the place where you can find it.
That same $5 that gets you access to Talking Futurama also gets you the week early free access to What a Cartoon, as well as that for Talking Simpsons and a ton of exclusive things that are on there. You'd be a fool not to give us $5 at least.
And we have been very busy, but we love it.
I feel like I should also sell myself a little bit up top, because I'm not a Talking Simpsons guy. I'm a friend of the Talking Simpsons guys. Mm-hmm. I enjoy you two immensely.
Thank
in
you.
Person. And the podcast, of course.
Thanks.
But I am not supported by your Patreon. I am just a fan of yours who I love cartoons. I make a YouTube show called Cartoons 101, which has been on a bit of a hiatus but will return soon, where it's video essays. The AV Club called them mini documentaries, so I feel okay calling them documentaries.
they're mini movies.
The AV Club featured my first video.
Awesome.
Which was about the history of Robin Williams playing the genie, how he got cast, how he left, how they begged him to come back with things like a $1 million Picasso painting.
That was a great video.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you were a total perfect first guest to have on our inaugural What a Cartoon.
Thank
for
you.
Sure.
In case you couldn't tell by his explanation, Matthew's a huge animation fan. We talk about animation whenever we're together, so he's the perfect guy to be on this first episode. And to cut to the chase, this episode is all about Batman the Animated Series episode Heart of Ice.
Taking up video games, are we, sir?
And as we'll do from now on, let's get into the history of Batman the Animated Series.
I did a big hunk of research for this. I was a huge fan of Batman the Animated Series as kids. I'm sure all of us were. Mm-hmm. I knew who Batman was before this show started. I was so excited for the Tim Burton Batman, the 1989 Tim Burton Batman. I loved it so much. But this show was even more important to me, I would say, than the Burton show, even in 92, before I realized how special it was. Mm-hmm. Starting in 1990, Warner Brothers Animation is looking to get into making a Batman animated series because the movie just came out and was huge. They're already working on Tiny Toons, so they want to start working on a Batman animated series. Internally, there are people who are working on Tiny Toons who make a pitch for Batman to the president of Warner Brothers Animation, Gene McCurdy. She is given this pitch by just two animators who work on Tiny Toons who had never showrun a show before, Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski, or Bruce W. Timm, as he's sometimes credited as, thanks to, like, I would guess, Writers Guild rules or whatever. So they make a pitch. Bruce Timm draws who he thinks his Batman should look like, a very stripped-down Batman. Eric Radomski shows shows what he thinks the background and the world should look like, a very painterly neo-noir style. And they're given the budget to do a test video, an animation test that they do together, which would become the opening of the show. It was so good. So the second G. McCurdy saw that, she's like, this is it. This is Batman. They talk about him and Eric Radomski in this amazing oral history of Batman in The Vulture, talk about how they were so shocked that they had never showrun a cartoon before. They were used to like, well, these things are supposed to be bad. Like, this is a toy commercial. This is He-Man. This is Transformers.
Super Friends.
The Super Friends. This is going to be all these bad shows. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want it to be that. And shockingly, Warner was right behind them the whole way. So then two more key people joined the staff when they were building it. Alan Burnett and Paul Dini. Mm-hmm. Alan Burnett had actually showrun cartoons before and he was ready to quit. But this opportunity was just too amazing for him. Paul Dini had just been like a journeyman on bad 80s cartoons. He worked on He-Man.
He was a writer for He-Man. And those are all Tiny Toons guys, right?
Yeah, they all came straight from Tiny Toons. And actually, I know in the first season of Batman the Animated Series, they had to use the color palette from Tiny Toons. They couldn't even change that. They were happier to be free of it in later ones. There's a number of Tiny Toons asides and jokes in early episodes of it. Like, someone is reading a Tiny Toons comic in one scene. But yeah, so they're working on the show together. They want to get far away from the Adam West Batman, which still so much defined Batman, but also all the animated appearances of Batman pre-1992 were kind of in the Adam West mold. You had Super Friends, you had the Filmation shows, and if they didn't cast Adam West directly, they got a guy to sound like Adam West. He was just a goofball.
Yeah, Adam West did play Batman many times, and then Robin was usually Casey Kasem.
That's right.
Yes, it's so what? Well, because especially on Super Friends, which was a Hanna-Barbera production, so like, we got Casey Kasem on lockdown.
Is he already? Yeah.
That really worked out when Batman was on Scooby-Doo in those movies.
It did, yes, yeah. Those were easily my favorite Scooby-Doo episodes as a kid, because I'm like, Batman, oh my God!
More than the Globetrotters?
I know, or Don Adams.
Yeah.
Don Adams.
That's right.
This island.
They didn't want it to be that. They wanted Batman to be closer to not just Tim Burton, but also they were coming straight out of the 80s, where Frank Miller and also Alan Moore, especially Doug Monet in the comics as well, and Mike W. Barr, a bunch of other writers and amazing artists like David Mazzucchelli, Norm Brayfogel.
Yeah.
Those guys
I just read a big collection of his Batman stuff.
He's really underrated in the Batman mythos. Like, he invented the third Robin. Like, his look, everybody loves Tim Drake partially because of that and Chuck Dixon's writing on it, but so they had all these
the less said about Chuck Dixon the better.
Yes. Yeah. But anyway,
sorry.
So yeah, they wanted to make a Batman that was more serious like that, and to make a show that kids could still enjoy and sell to kids on a kids network on Fox's brand new Saturday morning lineup. But they also wanted to have it something adults would like. It wouldn't be colorful. It wouldn't have a kid sidekick in it. They like their Robin is like 19,
and he just drops in to visit.
Yeah, it's very
rare. They send him to college, so they don't have to have him around all the time.
And I love that choice. And two other influences I'll say definitely that make this a timeless show. When you watch this show, you're not like, oh, it's so 90s. Like, so number one, Art Deco. This show is a very strong Art Deco influence. Number two, film noir. The reason I love crime fiction, the reason I love film noir is because of this cartoon.
Wow.
Because every episode is a little film noir. The way it is quote unquote shot, the way the characters talk, it is very much of that era.
The pacing?
The pacing,
it
too.
It is the slowest cartoon ever, despite being an action cartoon. And they also, very famously, the backgrounds are drawn on black paper.
Yes.
Because they couldn't afford that much black paint.
And every man wears a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every man wears a hat, and they wear, it's in my notes here, I love this show's, this is the bit of the 90s, late 80s style slipping in, where everybody's wearing giant stop making sense suits. Like, everyone's suits are giant and puffy until they do the redesign, where everything gets very sleek and straight lines.
And we'll talk about the design of the characters, but Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski were very smart in saying, like, let's make these as clean and minimalistic as possible while still conveying the characters. Because with a lot of action cartoons of this era, like, go look at the X-Men cartoon from the same year.
Woof.
It's like, okay, the characters will have as many lines as they do in the comic, which means they will be a complete mess moving around the screen. In this, they're all very clean, they're all very elegant, and then they can trust you overseas studios to not screw anything up. It's just like, it's a very, very simple design.
In the oral history, Tim talks about his vision on that too. He releases, like, you look at G.I. Joe at the time, and they had all these, like, belts and buttons, and he's like, you don't need to draw the shoelaces.
Yeah,
like,
they don't
nobody
move.
Misses them. Yeah. And so it was a real vision for him, too. And I will say, I think Paul Dini was the best writer on the show. He really set a tone for it, too, in the neo-noir kind of storytelling and the very compact storytelling, which he also took from comics. Like, Paul Dini, huge comic fan, who then he knew what was great about comic books, single issue stories like that could be done just like that and were about tight storytelling. I think another person who deserves a ton of credit for this show is Andrea Romano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, she is a legend in animation voice casting, and I dare say the best cast of any show in voice acting might be Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah. Andrea, she set the reason cartoons sound the way they do is because of her. Mm-hmm. These days, she started the trend. So, like, cartoons, the trends, which was also the trend at the time of her for the longest time, was like you hire like three dudes. Mm-hmm. And they do tons of voices, and they can do cartoony voices.
I can be every Smurf.
Yeah, but she realized, like, no, it's voice acting. So the first things first is actors. So, mm-hmm. like, they cast Kevin Conroy because he sounds like Batman should sound.
He is my Batman.
Yeah, he's still the voice I hear. And I actually believe, like, he still plays Batman. When he's not directed by Andrea Romano, it doesn't work for me. Like, I feel like she's...
There's something
exactly,
missing.
She brings out the Batman.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. in those DC animated series. But, like, and then the trend, or animated films they put out to DVD, he's just like, I am Batman still, when back then he had so much emotion. Mm-hmm. But as things went forward, now you have shows like Steven Universe, where every character is individually cast, because you're being cast for their voice, not for the voices they can do. And I feel like that is entirely born out of her career.
I love just the random character actors that will show up on Batman playing villains or just incidental characters. Like, I remember I rewatched all this show about a decade ago, and I was like, oh, this still holds up. And I was surprised. I'm like, that's Jeffrey Tambor just playing a dude. Like,
yes, yeah.
he wasn't a creep always, folks.
Mark Hamill.
Yes, Mark Hamill.
Like, they're the reason Mark Hamill's a huge voice actor. Like, he did voices before this, but like him being the Joker and being incidental characters, including in this episode where he plays the horrible business guy.
Rare spoil, yeah.
And Tim Curry was almost a Joker. I'm glad. Yeah. Tim Curry fucking is awesome, Mark Hamill. Woo.
Yeah, all right. Let's get into that story real quick then. Yeah. What happened was Mark Hamill's voice on this episode, Heart of Ice, it was just supposed to be a one-off, but at the same time, Alan Burnett, who was kind of at the top of the food chain, he didn't like the Tim Curry voice of the Joker. Andrea Romano actually said, I wouldn't have fired Tim Curry.
They always say it's too scary. That's usually the story they tell, is that like kids couldn't have watched Tim Curry play the Joker.
And so Mark Hamill, who is this mega dork, he tells a story of like, oh, I was reading Comic Book Buyer's Guide in 1991 and heard they were making this the right way. And so I had to tell him, let me be in this. And they said once they heard his laugh as the Joker, which he said he pioneered while on Broadway in Amadeus.
Wow.
They were like, it's the laugh.
Did he play Salieri?
No, he played Mozart.
Oh, because Amadeus. And apparently at one point, Mark Hamill, I remember the story about him when I was a kid, was that he had a warehouse full of comics.
Oh, God.
Like, him and Nick Cage would measure dicks with like their comic
amazing.
Collections.
So, yeah, Hamill's a huge dork. But Andrea Romano, she cast a million great voices on it. There's so many shows after this, like, say, Gargoyles, which has an amazing cast. I feel like they wouldn't have had half as good a cast if they hadn't been opened up.
Oh,
like,
David?
Yeah.
Gargoyles owns, but it is Disney's Batman the Animated Series, 100%.
They're biting off this style real, real tough, which they would also sort of do with Darkwing Duck. There's a lot of that in there, too. Mm.
But Kevin Conroy was a theatrical actor. He had done the theater. That's why, too, they were casting somebody who, if you watched a ton of cartoons, you didn't hear his voice anywhere else. Because, like, no, I play Hamlet, and I see a lot of Hamlet and Batman, as he would say in interviews a million times. But then he also understood Bruce Wayne and Batman have different voices and you play them differently.
That's always his story. He's like at the audition, you know, he's being, I'm Bruce Wayne. This is, which he does a lot more prominently in the earlier episodes. He really he softens Bruce up a lot and then turns into Batman. And he said when he did that, Andrea Romano was like, whoa, like she got the vapors.
And that was after they auditioned hundreds of people, they said, for that.
Yeah.
And another person that I don't think gets enough credit on this show is Shirley Walker.
I was hoping you get to her because, so the music in all throughout Batman is amazing. The music in this episode almost made me cry. Like, every villain has their own theme and they're all very beautiful. Just like Tiny Toons and Animation. Animaniacs, there's an original score by an orchestra for every episode.
I really miss when Warner Brothers Animation like stupidly overspent.
Oh, yeah.
It adds so much.
Or could. Oh,
once they got smart enough of like, we could spend less on this.
Yeah, we can can this and just pull the themes out from a library.
But it adds so much texture. It makes it feel more cinematic that these are real scores being played over these like cartoon scenes.
And the reason they got Shirley Walker is because, so they scored the opening of the show / test animation to Danny Elfman's classic Batman theme. And they're like, well, we can't afford Danny Elfman every episode, no way. And they found out that Shirley Walker, as they put it, helped with the Batman soundtrack with Elfman, which I think tells me she wrote more of it than, than they could legally say for ASCAP or whatever.
They could have gotten Prince.
That would have been tough for them to get him to write more than five songs. For, I think.
Speaking of the theme, I watched this on Amazon, which if you're looking to watch this show somewhere, they're all on Amazon Prime.
I was just going to say this.
Did you? So that about how the theme is the Batman Superman hour?
Yeah. I fucking hate that. I do.
But it's kind of cool the way it like weaves in and out of Superman and Batman. And I wasn't looking at it. I was just listening to it.
It's
and I was like,
song.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
It's fine.
It doesn't evolve enough.
Yeah.
Over
love
2 minutes.
I love the first theme, but I think I like the second Adventures of Batman and Robin theme more.
I'm inclined
even
to
better.
Agree with you. Yeah. I like a lot. I remember when that change happened, and then later on the internet, when people are nostalgically talking about this, people hated that change. And I was like, why? It's so cool. Like, I remember one tactical realism dork being like, you know, if the Scarecrow had that noose around his neck, Batman could just grab it. And it's like, what is
your life? Well, the Scarecrow changed a lot from his first appearance. He kind of has a Q-tip head in his first episode.
He's got a bag over his head. It's David Warner, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's got like a bag over his head.
No. David Warner is Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, yes. Okay, sorry.
Which, that is my Ra's al Ghul, too.
Yeah.
And it is Ra's, not Raz.
I was going to say
that,
too.
I don't give a fuck what Christopher Nolan thinks. It's Ra's al Ghul. That's how Dennis O'Neill, the creator of Ra's, says it. Mm-hmm. So, fuck you.
Danny O'Neill, the guy who like set the template for Batman, like even before, like Miller was riffing on him.
Yeah, no, and this show is so, you think it's influenced by, you know, Frank Miller, but it also big time the 70s Batman of
Neil Adams.
O'Neill and Neil Adams plus Stephen Englehart as well. Like tons. Sorry, this this isn't always going to be a comic book show, but Matthew and I are both big comic book dorks.
Yeah,
so.
Big dorks.
We should mention the Fleischer Superman shorts as being an influence as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Big time. Yeah.
Especially that clean, that line Claire, which is a French term about comic books. that clean line.
Go back
look.
To France.
Tintin. What's more of a Belgian expression? But that clean line, like just about the, it's about the movement. It's animation. Yeah, maybe once in a while, if you like, you know, it became a trend on the internet to pull out like smear frames and be like, look how silly this looks. But like that exists because the animation should look amazing.
Yeah. They spent money on those smear frames.
Yeah.
And, well, speaking of the animation, that is another key component to what so great about Batman the Animated Series. It would have great animators in, you know, the LA offices of Warner Brothers Animation working on it. And actually, if you want to see an interesting thing about the production of Batman the Animated Series, Paul Dini just did a autobiographical comic about when he was mugged while working on the show. Mm-hmm. Like Arlene Sorkin is in it. It also shows Paul Dini was going through some dark stuff then, which I think he channeled through most of the villains on episodes.
Oh, for sure.
And creating Zatanna.
Yeah.
Not creating her.
Jerking
but...
off to Zatanna.
Yeah.
Yeah. But more importantly, on the animation side, thanks to the huge budgets, they had the best animation studios in Japan and Korea making this. And this episode in particular.
Yes, I will say, having gone through all of this a decade ago, there are some not so great studios and some subpar looking episodes. Like
definitely.
The Feet of Clay two-parter is one of my favorites. The part one looks like trash because part two is TMS.
Yes.
Doing some of the best television animation ever aired on American TV.
I showed that clip of on my live show once that I did for a while in Philadelphia of him going crazy and switching back and forth between his characters, which is animated by TMS. It is some of the greatest animation ever committed to celluloid. It looks incredible, and it's because these people like really cared and
like,
put budget in it.
I can't believe this is on like before Eek the Cat or something.
there was no reason to overdo that. Like, while meanwhile X-Men is being made while Chaim Saban is just like, I will not pay an extra cent to make this look better.
In
I don't
fact, you all get pay cuts.
You all get pay cuts. Chaim Saban sucks.
Canadians.
But the TMS was their top Top Studio. This episode, Heart of Ice, was actually animated by a TMS offshoot called Spectrum, which a bunch of folks had quit TMS in Japan, which stands for Tokyo Movie Shinsha. They produced like a ton of stuff with Miyazaki before Ghibli. Pretty much every Lupin show is that. They then got bought by Sega in the 2000s, and they animated Sonic X. It was,
Really?
Was a TMS production.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. That show's
Sonic
not
X. I watched one episode. I'm like, why is the main character this little dork named Chris?
I watched a lot of it.
Right?
But we should point out that TMS was working on American animation because of the failure of the Little Nemo movie. They needed to recoup their losses. And that's why these brilliant, some of the best animators in Japan were making things for Tiny Toons, Animaniacs, Batman, Disney. Like, it was a golden age for animation.
And once they paid off that debt, unfortunately, that's when they kind of stopped doing it, or they became unaffordable.
They're like, the Philippines will do that for you.
One of the last, I think, Batman TMS productions was the Return of the Joker Batman Beyond movie, which looks incredible, too.
For my money, that's the best Batman movie.
And this episode is about
Mask of the Phantasm is pretty close too.
Yeah, that's a controversial statement, but I think that movie is incredibly watchable. It is incredibly adult, and I think it's the best Mark Hamill Joker performance.
The R rated cut is the better one.
God, it's amazing.
It's been a while, but I also really like Sub Zero, the second Batman movie,
a follow up to this.
Yeah, and another very emotional, super emotional Mr. Freeze episode.
Oh yeah, this episode in particular, Heart of Ice, 14th in production, which is where you'll find it on Amazon Prime and on the discs of the DVD collections too, because they're in production order. But in air order, this was the third.
Wow.
So the show was a blockbuster premiere. It was, they produced 65 fucking episodes at once. It was one of those straight to series order. Like, that's also crazy. Like, hey, Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski, you've never run a show before. Make 65. Just go ahead. Here's millions of dollars.
I believe the first episode premiered on Saturday, and it was a Catwoman episode because of Batman Returns. Batman had just come out that summer.
Yeah, Batman Returns had just came out. So they started with part one of The Cat and the Claw, where they face like the Red Claw, who's just a real loser spy villain. It's a dumb spot. It's not one of my favorites.
Most of the two-parters are not that great.
I love the Demon's Quest, though. That's the best.
Demon's Quest, the Two-Face one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Robin's Reckoning's pretty good, but not all of them.
Yeah. Well, and so then, the next night, on my 10th birthday, September 6th, 1992, they air the first episode in production order on Leather Wings.
With Man-Bat.
With Man-Bat, which... they aired at night. It was an 8 p.m. premiere on Sunday night. And I think it's because there is a trickle of blood on Batman's mouth in it. They're like, we can't show kids this.
It's a very Twilight Zone-y episode, too.
Yeah.
I think they're drawing a lot from the Twilight Zone as well.
Yeah, I think so. And it's just a straight-up horror episode. Then, on the first day of the regular afternoon airings of Batman, the animated series, which that title, too, that was the gravitas of it. They're like, this is not Batman and Friends. This isn't Batman the cartoon. It is Batman : the animated series. It's kind of a little like fart smelly, honestly, but I love it.
It's a series.
So, yeah, September 7th, 1992, the first one in the regular time slot, they start off strong with Heart of Ice.
That's amazing because when I don't know if we should spoil things ahead of time, but when I watched this episode, I walked away as a 10-year-old like you, Henry. I walked away being like, all the rules of cartoons have been broken, and this a cartoon made me sad. I'm 10.
Yes.
This cartoon made me sad, and I'm filled with emotion now. What do I do? Oh, Eek the Cat is on. Okay.
Yes.
But 25 years later, I got choked up like three times during this episode. It is it's powerful. It's a powerful episode.
Oh, yeah. Mighty powerful.
It took me a while to really discover the show because I was three when this episode aired.
How dare you be younger.
You should feel bad about that.
I was recently three as well. I really didn't connect with the show until I was like a teenager, until like long after it ended, because I would watch it as a kid and be like, this show's not as fun as Spider-Man on Fox, because Spider-Man is dumb as hell and I can enjoy how dumb it is. But this one was very serious and very quiet. We'll talk, and that's also another thing, talking about the music, also the lack of music in certain scenes where there are long stretches of silence, which was not allowed in cartoons. You cannot have just no noise happen.
Yeah, it was hard to get some clips in this. I was like, oh, it's just silent action here, or driving. Like, in some scenes in this episode, when like he's driving the Batmobile, there would have been in other cartoons a ton of exposition of like, Alfred, I'm going here to do this, and this is why, oh no, I'm losing control.
While the canned music is playing really loud.
And Robin would be there too, so they could have a conversation the entire way. But you're right, I picked
Jiminy
up on that
Jillikers.
Again. Yeah, Jiminy Jillikers. There's like maybe a 2-minute scene of Batman investigating with no dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, and at this point in time, and I think still, networks are like, there needs to be a sound effect every 3 seconds. We need to have someone screaming. Like, there can be nothing but wall to wall sound because a kid will tune out.
They'll stop watching if it's silent. Yeah. And one last thing but to set up this episode is you have to understand that in 1992, Mr. Freeze sucked. No one liked him. He was
like the Eggman or something.
Well, so he actually was on the show, the Batman 66, but when he first appeared in 1958, he was Mr. Zero.
And he wore like green and purple and
green
and
red, Christmas colors.
Oh boy.
And which somehow denoted ice.
Oh my God, I never made that connection. That's so stupid.
Yeah. And he did have the origin of, I have to keep my body always at freezing, otherwise I will die. But otherwise, he was like, and I got to steal shit, so I'm going to steal stuff. And he's just a crappy robber.
It was the 60s show, so he had three guys that were going,
yeah,
the whole time.
Ooh, I'm so cold. I'm acting so cold.
I don't want to feel like we're bashing that show. I love the 60s Batman
66
show.
It knows what it is. Yeah. It embraces that completely. And comic books were much different then.
Yeah.
And you can't make that show by accident.
There's actually a great collection called the TV Comics of Batman Comics, which is DC put together all the comics they took stories from for the 66 show, which is funny because they always pretend like the 66 show betrayed Batman's spirits. Like, these were the comics they just recreated. He was a goofball in the 60s. So they changed the name to Mr. Freeze in the show, and that followed in the comics as well.
Victor Freeze.
And he'd always...
Lucky.
He'd just been a joke. He had been killed off at the time this episode aired in the comics. And he was always seen as like just a crappy cold villain. Like so many superheroes have elemental villains. If you were going to say in 1991 who the best ice-themed villain in DC was, Captain Cold by a mile.
Captain Cold's way cooler, pardon the pun. And he also, Captain Cold's also got a chip on his shoulder about that. Mr. Freeze is now the coolest ice villain because he's like, I used to be the coolest. And he also explains that, like, oh, his gun just makes things cold. My gun changes the molecular structure of your body to freeze you.
I love when he does that because that's like the writer, usually Geoff Johns, saying like, this guy is definitely cooler than Mr. Freeze. Fuck you.
When I was a kid, he sucked.
Yeah.
I don't read superhero comics, but I'll say I like Dr. Ice. I'm sure he exists.
I also like Joe Chill was also great.
Wait
as well.
A minute. No.
Before we start, though, one last thing about just the series in general. I recommend a book. I don't know if it's still in print. It's called Batman Animated by Chip Kidd. It is a coffee table book full of all of the production information you ever wanted out of Batman the Animated Series, with plenty of input by the writers and artists and voice actors. It's so good. I hope it's still in print. It came out in like 1998.
Wow, I need to read
long
this.
Ago?
Yeah. I have it.
It's beautiful. It's huge. Chip Kidd, he is the best at that.
He's great.
Any book he puts together, like, they made one about Alex Ross that was wonderful. He made one about the Bat Manga, the Japanese Batman comics.
Oh, that one I do have. Yeah. That's awesome. Now, I will say on this, too, that Paul Dini was the guy who made Mr. Freeze matter, and he's very important to Paul Dini. Like, Mr. Freeze appears in many Paul Dini comics. Paul Dini has written a lot of Batman comics on top of producing television. I think he goes to comics when he wants to just make something faster. He's like, I could be paid more to make this as a cartoon, but let's just make Mad Love now, and in 3 years maybe they'll let us animate.
I was gonna say, if it's too sexy to be a cartoon.
Yeah. So Paul,
I think he also doesn't want to work with Bruce Timm.
I get that sense. I do get that sense now. Yeah, they kind of stopped working together at a certain point.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. I think they both are best together, kind of like Stanley and Jack Kirby are both very good separately, and I love their work separately, but they are the best together. They bring out but also they came to hate each other.
Kirby's DC stuff's not as good as Marvel stuff for a reason.
Yeah,
and
but
Stanley.
But I don't want to make assumptions about Tim or Dini, but it's something as a Batman animated series fan and just as a DCAU fan, I kind of wish Bruce Timm didn't get so horny.
He's a very randy boy.
Yeah,
he's
randy.
I remember buying one of his like art books and reading it and being like, what? When I was like 13 and being like, what is it? Why am I seeing characters from Evangelion naked? What is going on?
I remember reading I just reread it, actually, one of the Batman animated series comics that were coming out this time. They were not junk that just got shoved out on a license.
Fantastic.
The animators worked on it. They did the holiday special. If you were to read one, I would say start with the holiday special, because it is a bunch of short stories, some of which were adapted for the show, and almost all are either written by Paul Dini or Alan Burnett, drawn by either Radomski, Bruce Timm or Glenn Murakami?
Murakami.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. But there is one in there, the Bruce Timm one he draws, which was a very funny segment in the New Adventures of Batman Christmas episode where Harley and Ivy mind control Bruce Wayne and make him buy stuff.
That's better than Christmas with the Joker. That's the best Christmas Batman episode.
It starts out with Harley and Ivy hanging out in their apartment together
and talking
to each other in bed in their underwear. And okay, I'm glad you got to draw your sexy sleepover in this kid's book, Bruce Timm.
And that's where that shipping between them two starts. People say they've been in a lesbian relationship, and it's also been like heavily implied. It's not just fans.
I know in recent Harley books and Ivy books, Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, the creators on that, they've been very clear of these are two women in a relationship. They're not best of buddies. We're not joking about it anymore. These two have had relations.
And he got the joke. Do you want to rev up your Harley into a comic book in the cartoon? Have you seen the original art for that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. She's
laying like she's on a Harley. Mm-hmm. She's got her legs up and open as if she's leaning back on a Harley, and they had to change it to her on her knees and just doing a little motion.
Yeah, which still was quite sexual.
Very much. And she's going vroom vroom, bouncing up and down. Joker just pushes her off.
Yeah,
which I mean, we can get, I'm sure at some point we may revisit Batman again and talk about the Joker and Harley relationship, which is a loaded topic.
Yeah, we will never do another episode of Batman, never.
Good, throw it in the garbage. We already did the best one.
Okay, so yes, here we are.
Sorry, Bob.
Heart of Ice.
You broke my heart.
No, I mean, sorry that we just talked about.
Oh, no. I learned so much.
Yes. And
I have one more thing. I'm so sorry. Scott McCloud and Evan Dorkin worked on those comics as well.
That is right. Yeah. And also, Darwin Cook, the late Darwin Cook, he was an animator for that Batman series as well.
Wow, I didn't know this.
Biggest of all on Batman Beyond. That was really his show. He really helped define its look.
He has said that his style, which is very animated and very stripped down as well, but with little details in the inking usually, he said it came out of him trying to get a job on these shows.
Oh, that's
beautiful. He basically changed his style for
that. Wow.
R.I.P. Darwin Cook.
Yeah.
He was
R.I.P. I love that guy so much.
He was like the perhaps the best just pure draftsman of his age.
New Frontier still might be my single favorite mainstream comic book.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
All right, so this episode, Heart of Ice, it begins very differently from almost every other Batman because there's no title card. It is not a title card. It is text on screen and then goes straight into a nice little, one of many great soliloquies by Mr. Freeze.
He's very theatrical.
This is how I'll always remember you. Surrounded by winter, forever young, forever beautiful. Rest well, my love. The monster who took you from me will soon learn that revenge is a dish best served cold.
Despite the obvious pun, the music, the dialogue, the acting, I still get goosebumps. It's so great.
Yeah.
And we can't see it in front of us, but just the beautiful shot of Mr. Freeze. Like when Batman is revealed in the intro, Batman is a painting with eyes drawn on it. He is also a painting where they just animate the eyes and the mouth. It's very creepy.
It's basically the title card there, that frozen shot of him, no pun intended, with his painted on mouth. So that voice there is Michael Ancara. He also has passed away. He died in 2013.
Mm.
And he was one of the many great character actors they just cast on the show. He was Syrian ancestry, but he played Native Americans in a million different shows in the 60s. But if you're a mega nerd, then you probably know him from Star Trek as Kang the Klingon. I have a clip of him here.
Have any more of your men died? We can't be killed. There's an alien aboard. It wants us alive. No doubt you will reassemble after I have hacked you to bits.
Boo!
Wow, we just did Talking Futurama, and there's a glowing ball of light, yep, just like from that episode.
That's the episode Day of the Dove, where a omnipresent being gets on the ship and forces the humans and the Klingons to kill each other over and over again for sport. Hmm. That is Kirk saying, like, you fool, we're trapped in this forever. He's like, then I'll hack you to bits. Like, and
sounds reasonable.
Michael and Sarah played a Klingon, that same Klingon Kang, in that episode Day of the Dove, then on Deep Space Nine in the 90s, and in Voyager in the 2000s as well, in a classic Voyager episode that was a flashback, was an episode where Captain Janeway goes back to Captain Sulu's own ship, and he is talking with Kang in the era before Next Gen. Hmm. So it's really interesting. He is a guy who, one of the very few actors who had appeared in multiple Star Trek series as the same character, Kang the Klingon. And so perfect casting for Mr. Freeze.
I mean, there's lots of nerdy inclinations towards casting. I mean, Roddy McDowell's in episodes. Any big sci-fi. I mean, obviously, we talked about Mark Hamill.
Yes. Yeah. There's like 8 references to Empire Strikes Back. There's 2.
I was going to bring that up. I've got them both in my notes.
But another thing about the animation for Mr. Freeze in this, which they talk about on the commentary, is Spectrum, the animation studio, were perfectionists and airbrushed the helmet on Mr. Freeze in every frame it appeared in. And Bruce Timm on the commentary says, and that's why Spectrum shut down. They were a little too perfectionist.
Yeah, watching it in HD, not really, but on an HD screen, you can tell it's pretty consistent. Very rarely does it ever pop outside of his helmet.
Mm. Totally. Yeah.
But it's one of the, we should explain why that's so difficult, because that's not the same as doing a brush stroke. When you're frosting something like that, you're spraying something.
Yeah.
So having it move smoothly and not just freak out between frames is incredibly difficult.
Yeah. I think someone took maybe 10 years off their life doing that for this episode.
That's like when you see a cartoon and somebody's like, if they're bald or something, they have like a little window drawn on them. It's like 4 squares. That's how you denote that without doing the incredible work they did here. They just draw like a circle and a line.
That's like it. Yeah, but that's like Archie's like crosshatch in his hair to be like, he has kinky hair. That's the thing with Archie.
Is that what that is? I thought someone was playing tic-tac-toe on his face.
So then we get some nice little exposition on a bunch of crimes happening in Gotham City. Who would have thought?
In the midst of the hottest August on record, a rash of bizarre cold-related crimes have chilled Gotham to the bone. Once again, the target is a Gothcorp facility, attacked by an assailant wielding what witnesses called a freezing gun. The attacker's motives remain unclear. We spoke earlier with Gothcorp CEO Ferris Boyle, who offered these comments.
I don't know what this person has against Gothcorp, but we've always looked upon ourselves as the people company. If this man has a problem, we're willing to listen.
A heartfelt plea from the chairman of Gothcorp, the People Company. This is Summer Gleason for Gotham Insider.
Hey, get out of here!
So this is just flat exposition. It's well done, but I will say the WB difference is during this shot, there are kids playing in the snow behind Summer, and then like a cop chases them away, and then they're throwing snowballs at the cop. All that animation is going on in the background. This could have just been a still shot of her face with just her lips moving, and that could have done the job. But all this stuff is going on behind her, which no other show would do.
I know. They really... They had to give you a little more interesting stuff in the frame than just that. But I also like, from a storytelling perspective, the standard thing would be you start the episode with Mr. Freeze stealing something and then Batman fights him and gets defeated. And that's their first meeting. Instead, they're like, Mr. Freeze has been doing this for weeks now.
Yes.
He's almost done making his death ray.
Yeah, there is a one continuity note there. Gothcorp would later be known as Hot Topic. also, that half of Batman's job is generally done by branding. Like, I'm watching Hannibal now, and a lot of Hannibal is like, was this the Ripper, or was this the copycat? Who did this? Was this a new guy? Batman's like, oh, they're all cold things? All right, it's probably the same guy, so I can probably find
him. There's one cold guy.
I think Batman has never looked better than when he is lit by his bat computer typing there. Like, just the it's a tough thing to say, is Batman's costume blue or black in these early episodes, because it's lit blue but has black outlines on it. But he's just so clicking those giant keys and showing off that ray gun to Alfred. Love it.
His keyboard has a hold button. A new button will generate based on his need.
And then also you get a setup of Alfred being a jokester. What a funny guy he is. And I also like the, I looked at the first appearance of Mr. Freeze, Mr. Zero, and his cold ray in this looks rather similar, actually. Mm-hmm. I think they based it on it intentionally.
I'm sure some of that is in there, that they're looking at those things. Also, while we're talking about Mr. Freeze still, the voice, I feel like that voice is sort of a reference to an old-timey actor, and I can't pin it. It almost feels like he's doing like a Max von Sydow kind of like very silent, like stoic, like someone who played a villain in something. But my note about his voice performance is when we hear him as Victor Freeze and when we hear him as Mr. Freeze, which he loses his doctorate when he becomes a supervillain, which I never understood that. But also that I feel like he's doing Doc Brown and Judge Doom. Like, those are the two modes he kind of has. I don't know if he's doing that purpose, but I definitely feel that, and he looks like Judge Doom.
Interesting. While reading about this episode, I did see that the actor wanted to play him much more robotically, and they, like, kind of had to fight him on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Ansar definitely had his own choices, but it worked out pretty well, yeah. I would say. And the animation, too, on the arrival of the Batmobile, when it is chasing Mr. Freeze, and that Batman's... I love that he's a detective immediately. He's like, well, yeah, if he's going to build this ray gun and he's one last thing and I know where that is, so I'm going there. Like, that's, it explains that he is a detective. Batman is not just a dude who fights villains or just shows up and says corny things. On this show, he is the Dark Knight detective, very much so.
Which is a thing we have yet to get in the movies, I feel like. We've never had a detective Batman in the movies, but, I mean...
Well, you'll see him, like, shoot bullets into something like this. Bullet's from this place.
I hate that part where he puts the back together a fingerprint.
Yep.
Which, like, cops can't even do when a bullet, like, falls down. Like, the fingerprints are very fragile. Speaking of movies, this did lead to a Batman movie. They adapted this episode in Batman and Robin.
Boo.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I will say it is now a fun movie to watch because you go into it saying, this is going to be bad. Let's have fun with being bad.
Yeah. It's super fun. It super leans into it. I don't consider it a good movie in any way, although I do consider Batman Forever to be incredibly watchable, fun 90s action. Mm-hmm. I think that hits a lot more actually pretty good parts.
They have their own value. Yeah. I do want to point out, though, that this amazing chase scene, boy, I wish you could see it. It's so great. But it is so anime. I mean that in a complimentary way, where to animate cars consistently moving smoothly is one thing. To animate them slipping on ice and drawing the reflections underneath the cars... Again, people kill themselves to make this episode. Yes. It is so gorgeous.
It would be 3D models today, all the cars. They also talk a lot about when the Batmobile's leaving and it goes down that windy road. Mm. Like, they had to fight so hard to be like, the Batmobile doesn't bend. Like, a lot of animators would draw it kind of curved around, like, it's a Bugs Bunny car. And they're like, no. It's a solid object. This is not that kind
of
cartoon.
It's a big old hot dog, and you can't turn it. Yeah. Like, and speaking of the animation, too, in that car chase, when he ices the road, like the ice, the way it just expands and like paints the ground. I'm
it's beautiful.
Jesus Christ.
So beautiful.
So
again,
fluid.
Thinking like, this was on TV 25 years ago. Dear Lord.
Mm-hmm. No one would animate something like that on a TV budget now. Like, never. You'd be happy to see one frame like that in any show you'd see on Cartoon Network.
I mean, even the direct-to-Blu-ray or streaming movies look not as good as this.
Those movies look awful.
Yeah. They should look so much better.
They're too fucking flashy, man.
They looked good for a while. Like, if you watch the Batman one that's the Animatrix but Batman, like, they looked pretty good back then, but the ones that come out now look like dog shit almost 100% of the time.
I didn't watch. I've only seen like 20 minutes in clips of Batman and Harley.
Oh my God.
Woof. That's it trying to be this show, and it falls on its fucking face because
it's
they
awful.
Just don't have the money, the budget, whatever.
And they should have the money. This is Batman.
But this, and I mean, the funniest bad animation in that movie is the double butt drawn on Highland Harley. It's like, well, we want to bend her over and show her with a butt, but we also need a butt crack. So her butt crack needs to go on top of her butt. It's like, you're so horny for Harley, you drew this so shittily.
Do you know those butts that are like double butts?
Shut up, Bruce Tim. But they're also not well written or fun or good in any way. And they had a really good run. Like, the Red Hood's a good one.
Yeah.
New Frontier is fantastic, to mention that again.
That's the best, yeah.
That's the best one they produce. I even think the first one, the Superman Doomsday one, is like fun.
No, they were figuring stuff out, but it was good. Yeah. Superman got to have a sleepover with Lois Lane in that one.
I went with my dad to see the Killing Joke one in the theater.
Woof.
That was a horrific.
That was in theaters?
They now do that with almost
like
most
a Fathom
of them.
Event.
A Fathom event. They showed it like one time. They've done it with a bunch of them since. They did it with Harley Quinn. They did it with the one that just came out, Gotham by Gaslight, which that's one of my favorite Batman stories. I'm terrified to even look at that one. But The Killing Joke, which is already a story that has not aged well.
No, I wouldn't return to it anyway.
It's so much worse. Everything they add to it is disgusting. And it's, again, trying to be edgy and cool like this show. And it's just they fail at it because you can't. It's not as edgy as Steven Universe. Like, it's you're making it worse.
And also, Brian Azzarello, he's not very good at Batman stories, I would say. And that one, too, was poisoned by Bruce Timm's horniness to put together. I'm sorry to attack Bruce Timm in this. He's a genius. I love him. But he keeps shipping Barbara Gordon with Bruce Wayne. I'm just
weird.
I get it. You want to fuck Batgirl, too. Like, calm it the fuck down, dude.
And this episode is edgy, but in like a very classy and timeless way. It's not in a like, oh, this is shocking.
In the way
vulgar.
That like a character yells at another character, murderer. And I was like, wow,
this Batman going, my God.
He yells that as he takes from a security guard. This is in the flashback for Victor Freeze. Do we have a clip of that?
We'll get to it.
Okay. But in the flashback, he takes a security guard's revolver, very real looking gun, and calls his boss a murderer because he's trying to kill Nora.
That shocked me, that scene, even now.
Batman catches up to Mr. Freeze as he's stealing stuff for his nefarious deeds. And there is a classic Batman arrival of he grabs somebody off screen like, oh, the Batman. I love that. And when Mr. Freeze meets Batman for the first time, I love all this dialogue here.
Are you done?
All set.
The Batman.
Put me down.
Freeze! That's Mr. Freeze to you.
What all these sounds to me.
This is a personal vendetta. It doesn't concern you.
It's my concern now.
Since you ally yourself with my enemies, you leave me no choice.
What I love about the dynamic of this scene and this relationship, especially for a 1992 superhero cartoon, Batman shows up and Mr. Freeze is not like, Batman, I will defeat you, finally. He's just like, get out of my way. This is my fucking business.
I don't care who you are. I'm not out to kill you. But if you're going to get in my way, I will stop you.
Mm-hmm. I like that he's like, I'm not a villain. I have a thing. But he's also kind of digging it where he's like, that's Mr. Freeze to you. That's such a classic supervillain line that he's like, this is pretty cool.
he's getting into it.
There's multiple moments in this episode where he says like, I feel nothing. And then it's like, you do feel stuff. Why you're telling
burying
yourself.
All his feelings, but I love when he freezes the legs of his henchmen on accident, and it just is like very callous. It's like you fucked up, and I'm leaving. Goodbye.
This whole sequence is great because one, you get to know him by name, Johnny, so you're feeling worse for this unnamed henchman. You're just like, no, Johnny, no, and. I swear, if Paul Dini had written this scene in the comics, his legs would have shattered.
Yeah.
Like, but you can't do that. There are lines they can't cross on this show.
I just started rereading Gotham Central, which begins with Mr. Freeze freezing and shattering a cop.
These two cops go into a room. They think they're going to catch a lead on Mr. Freeze. Mr. Freeze is actually there. He makes one guy into just simply ice and then breaks him apart piece by piece in front of his partner like, see, this is what Gotham does to you.
They think they're not even looking for Freeze. They're just following a lead.
Yeah,
and they open the door and they're like, oh, fuck. And then gets frozen.
It's Gotham Central. Every issue is amazing.
It's incredible.
The omnibus is totally worth like the 50, 60 bucks it costs. Like if you love Batman the Animated Series, read Gotham Central. Montoya is and Harvey Bullock. Yeah. Well, he appears, but Montoya is a major character in it.
She's another Dini creation, I believe.
Yes.
Also a lesbian.
Not on this show, but it's
implied. That girl visits her.
They know who. But anyway, yes. Johnny getting frozen. I just love this acting here.
Take it easy, man. I got you.
Leave him. He should have been more careful. Now he's paid the price for his incompetence.
Oof. But he's one of us.
Then perhaps you'd like to share his fate.
Don't leave me, please.
So for the first time while watching this, I think I noticed a very intentional thing they're doing here. The parallels between Batman and Mr. Freeze. They both have revenge-based agendas, but Batman does it in a like a more morally correct way. So Freeze leaves the guy behind, Batman saves him. We'll see more of this later in the episode, but I feel like it's intentional. Like Batman sees a lot of himself in Mr. Freeze.
A lot of episodes are about Batman would even say, I almost agree with you, but you're doing this wrong. And then the guy would say, like, well, then we are enemies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or that's how many Batman episodes go. And this him breaking out of the ice, too. I love that.
It's really beautiful.
It's so great. And Batman is beaten the first time by Mr. Freeze. But also it's classic Batman storytelling, too, of if he wanted Johnny to die, he could chase Mr. Freeze and maybe catch him. But Batman just cares too much.
Yeah,
Batman is not a killer. I don't care what Zack Snyder wants you to think. Batman doesn't kill people.
It's a save the henchman moment.
Exactly, yeah. And he likes this guy so much, he takes him back to the Batcave and saves his legs.
Puts him in some goo.
Puts him in a back-to-tank.
Yes, the first of two Empire Strikes Back moments in this is his back-to-tank. It's basically the thing that Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, survives being frozen in Empire Strikes Back in the beginning of that.
From the other reference they make.
Yes, exactly. From the other one. God damn it. But this is also when we start to see some weakness in Batman when he's thawing out the thug.
I must say, you're showing a surprising amount of compassion for that man, considering he would surely have left you to die in his place. On your belt, you'd think there'd be one for tissues.
He cares about Master Bruce quite a lot, but I just love all the 50s science-y shit in the bat cave.
It is
beautiful.
Anime AF.
Yeah,
it looks incredible.
So is. And I don't think in this next clip, I don't think you can't see it, but the animation, I don't think Batman has ever sneezed more beautifully.
It's a beautiful sneeze.
He's pulling through. The hot chemical bath did the trick. You could use a hot bath yourself. I can't worry about a cold now, after Batman drops our unconscious guest at police headquarters. Bruce Wayne has got a meeting with Mr. Ferris Boyle.
It's an interesting choice to tell Kevin Conroy as Batman to sound more sick and hoarse.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
I'm Batman. No, I'm Batman with a cold.
I have a little cold here. It shows Batman is weaker in this, too, that he is like, he's dealing with some shit, but he's like, but I'm Batman. I can't. Batman doesn't have sick days.
That's great to show. Like, speaking of Batman showing weakness, I feel like just a few years earlier, a superhero cartoon would not be able to have a superhero like have a cold throughout an episode. That's such an interesting little wrinkle to throw in there.
I doubt that would happen on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yeah.
But which I was perfectly, in general, Batman the Animated Series ruined me because in the 80s, I was so excited to watch Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. I was like, well, this is great. It's Spider-Man on my television. And then once I watched the animated series of Batman, I was like, oh, this Spider-Man show sucks.
It ruined every superhero cartoon for me because I wanted them all to be as good as Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which even the ones they made were usually not as good. Superman is great, but it's just not as good.
Yeah.
It's
missing something.
It's missing something. It doesn't have as many great episodes, and I feel like they don't have confidence in Superman as much as they should. Where they really underpower him.
Yeah.
And that stinks. That's a real shame because Superman, the whole thing is that, like, oh, you can't write Superman because he's too strong. It's like, well, if you're a good writer, you figure out a way that, he either fights a guy who's stronger than him, which there are plenty of those in the DC universe, or he has other ways of saving and dealing with people. Like,
well,
he doesn't just beat everyone up.
When they were making Superman the Animated Series, they were also stuck in a crappy time of post-crisis Superman where they were having to deal with, like, no, this kind of has to be John Byrne's Krypton, and Superman can't travel through time because he flies so fast. Like, he can't lift a planet. Superman should struggle with a plane. And it's like, boy, that's why they had to keep powering up Superman as the series went on, and even more so in Justice League. Superman show got better once they finally were like, fuck it, it's Kirby Fourth World. This is what this show is now.
They lean into that so hard, which also, that's one of the many things, just like this episode, just like some of these stories over the Timverse or Daniverse, whatever you call it, take forever, whereas Mr. Freeze returns in Batman Beyond. The opening scene of On Leather Wings, where you see Man-Bat's shadow flying, that scene is mirrored in the episode set set way in the future in Justice League.
Their original, what they thought was the last episode of Justice League, which they called Epilogue. It's a very good episode. But Bob, you were mentioning to us before this episode that the evils of capitalism is a story.
Yes, it's a very common theme. So again, I'm a leftist, so I might be seeing this. My Marxist reading of Batman the Animated Series, by the way, I could probably write a thesis on this and get PhD. But I noticed upon seeing this Mr. Freeze episode again, like, oh, there are so many villains that are created by ruthless capitalism and awful CEOs. And I was thinking, of course, about the Riddler episode, the first Riddler episode, where Batman has to help a bad rich person because someone is rightfully trying to get revenge on him. And that episode ends with that person will never be safe again, and Batman's kind of cool with it. Like, you
what
should be afraid for your life.
Yeah. Sleep.
That episode's called If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich?
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And the Riddler is a pissed off game developer who got his game stolen from him. It's a much more, it's a snotty Riddler, but it's not Frank Gorshin's.
Yes. It's a more put together Riddler. And also, Clayface is the victim of ruthless capitalism with that, like, goop he puts on his face.
The Joker's casino episode, he is brought up, he destroys the casino because a rich guy wanted him to show up and steal it. And there's also one of my favorite new season episodes of Batman was Joker's Millions, which was based on a comic story as well, where the Joker inherits a ton of money and he then becomes a rich asshole who hires Johnny Cochran actually to let him get away with it, all of his crimes. And then he finds out he actually has less money than he thought and has now spent himself into debt. But he can't admit it because then he'd have to admit that the Joker got tricked by somebody.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember how the Mad Hatter became the Mad Hatter. I know his girl left him.
He definitely was a sad man obsessed with a girl in his office. But
a girl named Alice.
Yeah, and also he got fucked over by a businessman, too.
Yes, yeah. It's a very touching episode that makes you sympathize with a creep.
Yeah.
And there was Mercury in the hats, and it made him crazy.
Yes, yeah. But so here we get to meet Ferris Boyle, the first Mark Hamill voice on the series.
He's the worst.
Maybe it's an investor who lost money. Or an angry ex-employee.
There's only one man who'd hate Goff Corp that much, if he were alive.
Who?
One of our scientists, an obsessed wacko. He was caught using company equipment for personal reasons. I had to send my security men in. There was a fight, an explosion. We lost him.
What was he doing?
Wasting company money. My money. Look, Bruce, that people company line is great PR, but when the wage slaves start acting like they own the place, it's time to pull the plug. Know what I mean?
Ugh. Sir, the Humanitarian Committee is here.
I'll be right out. We're hosting a ceremony tonight for Gotham's Humanitarian Industrialist of the Year. Guess who's winning?
I feel ill.
Ooh. Hmm?
Excuse me, Ferris. My cold. Congratulations on your award. I'm sure it's well deserved.
Oh boy. Boo-hoo. Kitty's got claws.
I wonder if Boyle is even smart enough to know that sarcasm. I just
probably not.
I love that scene because Boyle is being an extra asshole because he's like, well, yeah, you're rich. We're both two rich guys talking about this. We hate people and steal from them. That's what rich people
Speaking of parallels, we'll see later in a later scene that like Ferris Boyle is like the malevolent billionaire to Bruce's benevolent billionaire. We see how he treats his workers, and then later Bruce treats one of his workers very nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Bruce Wayne is the good capitalist and all this. It's hard.
That doesn't ever exist.
Yeah, that's why he's made up. He's the good capitalist who helps people and
that's
uses
his superpower.
I've heard it made fun of many times. Like, well, what's Batman? Well, he's a rich guy who beats up poor people. That's what Batman is. But
mentally ill poor people.
That's why you need scenes like this to get more on Batman's side. If he's just like, no, you feel, maybe you think I'm an out of touch playboy. I hate this rich guy too, and I think he should suffer. Like, he agrees in theory with the aims of Victor Freeze.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne could easily be one of the idle rich just going to parties and being an asshole, but he's like devoted his life to a good cause.
If his parents weren't murdered in front of him, he would be Ferris Boyle. Like,
yeah.
That's the risk. Whenever he meets a rich asshole, that's like, oh yeah, that's Bruce. And it's also something I love about that they really got on the animated series, which has been copied by many other future Batman works, including the very recent Telltale Batman games. There are things Bruce Wayne can do that Batman cannot, and that includes investigations like this. Batman could have just crashed into Ferris Boyle's home and be like, tell me what happened. But
yeah.
Bruce Wayne has the softer touch and gets him to admit the same shit.
It's very clever, yeah.
Yeah, and it's great in the Telltale Batman games as well. Like, you get to play scenes as Bruce and feel a lot more nervous than if you were Batman and just like, well, I'm Batman. I'm going to punch this guy till he gives me what I want because I'm Batman in a video
game. And he tortures people. It's what Batman does.
Yeah, Batman. Batman doesn't kill, but he will concuss you into a coma and break both your legs, and you will never walk the same again.
Or hold you off the edge of a building and tell you, like, tell me, you know, the answers or whatever.
But he doesn't kill you.
No.
If you ask me, Ferris Boyle needs a day off.
Mr. Freeze is ready to give him a day off permanently.
Oh boy, more theatrical speeches.
And I want to say that these unwarranted attacks against Gothcorp have in no way changed our personal commitment to the community.
Inspirational words from Gotham's Humanitarian Industrialist of the Year.
Humanity, compassion, charity. Where were those pretty words when she needed to hear them? Master, the cannon must be completed tonight. I have my own warm wishes to bestow on Mr. Boyle.
And that hideout of Mr. Freeze was ripped off completely for Batman and Robin, except they missed the entire point of it. He's like, oh yeah, Mr. Freeze's hideout should be in a freezer and everybody has to wear parkas and
sing Christmas songs.
Yeah, and then they have to watch cartoons. Like, no, Mr. Freeze isn't making people watch cartoons and sing songs. Like,
I can appreciate Batman and Robin now as a fun, bad movie, but at the time I was like, they ruined this really, like, emotional character by making him ridiculous.
By making him ridiculous, but then still trying to have scenes later of, like, I miss my dead wife.
Yeah.
Like, no, no.
And then you find out that he got $25 million for like 12 minutes.
I know. Hey, if you get good money, if you can get it, that's what I say. Then they go back to the Batcave where, like, his keyboard has never looked more gigantic.
Oh,
those
God.
Buttons are monstrous. And then we get what at first seems like a cute line, but is actually stealthily Chekhov's chicken soup on the shelf.
I remembered this headline from last year.
Does it say what caused the accident?
No. And I suspect that's the reason for the cover-up. I won't know for sure until I check Gothcorp's classified files.
If you're going to go sneaking around a crowded office building, you'll need this.
Knockout gas?
Chicken soup. The only way to fight a cold.
Very, very cute. And you're right. It is foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's foreshadowing. But Alfred has done so many cute asides in this episode that you're just like, ah, that's a funny joke. It is not obvious that they are setting up a tool that will save the day in the end. I just had to laugh at Batman looking at microfiche. That's just so silly.
That's the thing with the technology in the show is, like, their original idea was always black and white monitors, which they go back a couple times, usually to trick you.
They broke it in this very episode. Yeah.
I think they say that in the commentary as well. I think they say, like, we hate that we had to do that, but it was for a reveal.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of, like, they show the engine of the car. It looks like a 50s engine. There's a lot of weird old stuff. But they've also got, like, very small portable cameras that are bigger than at the time, but still more portable than they should have been and stuff like that.
Yeah, and also the back computer is, it's big and boxy, but it's definitely, they didn't have computers in 1955 in the actual noirs they're referencing. They get to play around a lot with it. I also, when Batman arrives at Gothcorp to steal the information, I love him in disguise. And especially, you can actually hear it in this clip, the satisfied walk away by the other guard.
That's great.
Mr. Boyle sent me to fill in. Enjoy yourself at the party with his compliments.
Great! You okay?
I'm fine. Take off.
That's great. As I was saying earlier, before Boyle was like, these wage slaves, I hate them. And then Batman's like, you get to go to a party.
Yeah.
I will hang out here.
Batman could have thrown knockout gas at him. He could have beat him up. He's like, security guard, I'll knock him out. And so he's like, hey, take the night off, man. It's on me.
And I feel like that is intentional to say, like, Batman is the good billionaire to the evil billionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't knock out that guy that's getting paid $3 an hour.
Yeah.
Let him go to a party. And just, I like also that's the explanation of why he didn't think about. A good security guard has said, why is this security guard I've never met before telling me to leave? Oh, well, but instead he's like,
screw this.
Free night for me.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
It's so beautiful. And I would say, if I was Ferris Poyle's lawyer, I would have told him, destroy any evidence you have. Don't put it in a file, especially one that it's at least manslaughter.
Why would you at least keep the tape? I mean, yeah. It's a literal smoking gun. Do we want to hear that?
Yeah.
So this is how Freeze got froze.
My name is Dr. Victor Freeze. I am recording what I pray will be mankind's first step toward immortality. Behind me you see the CC-100, a cryogenic freezing chamber of my own design. I created it for the express purpose of freezing subjects stricken with inoperable ailments. Subjects like my own beloved wife, Nora. Mm. Once a remedy has been found...
Open this door!
I like, one, how they animate it. They try their most to be like, oh no, this is a camera. Like, this is a security camera just cut together. It's like, boy, there were like 17 security cameras in that room.
I remember the commentary. It's been a decade. I remember like Bruce Timm or Eric Radomski saying, apparently he was shooting coverage in his lab.
Yes, I know. Yeah, but you just kind of shrug like it works for dramatic effect.
And it would be boring if it was just one stock shot for one like camera angle for 2 minutes or however long the scene takes.
And this whole thing with Nora and his wife, it follows the old comic book saying of like, well, what made somebody a villain? One bad day. And this is all Victor Freeze is a doctor who loves his wife and wants her to not die. And
Nora.
He wants Nora to not die. That's it. That's all he wants. Mm-hmm. And people getting in the way of that is what turns him evil, and or at least puts him on his path. And you can think about that too, of like, we all love people and we're like, well, what would I do if this person was threatened, especially by a gormless capitalist who's just like, I own everything here, fuck you,
I will
like,
personally kill your wife.
Yeah, you cost me $3 million, this is my money. And though I should spoil things, Nora is not dead. As they would find out in the Sub-Zero movie, her body was still alive, and they actually got her out, and she lived, though then Mr. Freeze would end up being just ahead and could not be with her. But that was Sub-Zero is a great follow-up to this, especially because it's the last thing they ever animated in this style.
Right, and there's only one other Mr. Freeze episode, right?
Solo Mr. Freeze, yeah. Because they pretty much just tell, like, is the story.
There's really nothing more to do, and it would be kind of like it would destroy his character if he was just like a scheming villain after this,
or if he teamed up with like Mad Hatter. He's like, no, yeah, why would he?
And then he's a head on robot spider legs.
Yeah, and in Batman Beyond, he is one of the few villains who returned in the Batman Beyond series. They mostly just made him new villains, but he was one of the few. Him, Ra's, and Joker, I think, are the only three that got full on return episodes.
They made that show specifically because like, we need a teen Batman so we can make toys out of it. And Bruce Sims like, fine, I'll make the least toyetic show ever. And he did. Like, there are not that many toys from that show.
No, and I love that show. It was made...
It holds up real well.
It was made under, like, terrible situation. And they... Mm-hmm. It's also... It's what if Spider-Man was coached by Batman? That's the show. And I fucking love it because Spider-Man is my favorite hero. Like, he's my favorite superhero. So having Terry McGinnis basically be Peter Parker. Can I go on this date? I'm going to miss the school prom because I have to be Batman.
Man. It's a fantastic show.
It's a Boy Meets World episode.
It is.
It's also full of horrifying, scary things like killing the Fantastic Four.
A lot of body horror on that show, for sure. And the deaf guy, the sound guy who then deafens himself. And Ink, just fucking, I love Ink, like his animation. Mm-hmm. Back to this show, the video, things take a real turn after the arrival of Ferris Boyle.
I'm already $3 million in debt, thanks to you. You can't stop it now. My wife is in there.
So bring her out.
You can't interrupt the process now!
Open it.
It's her only chance!
This is my equipment! Mine! I have every legal right to use it or not use it as I see fit. I say this project ends now!
No! Stay away from her! Murderer!
Peter. I'm sorry. I lost my temper. It doesn't have to come to this. We can talk.
Oh! What a dick!
Get out! Get out!
Nora!
My God. Yes. It would move me to tears if I still had tears to shed.
Love that sound.
Yes. So this early in the series, I think they're getting away with things they could not do later, like having a character point a realistic handgun at another character.
Yeah, their cover on the commentary is, well, it's an ice gun. Billy can't pull an ice gun out of his dad's closet.
But in the security footage, he steals a real gun.
He does.
That your
yes.
dad could have yeah, and points true. It at a man.
Yeah. It could be yeah. in the back of your dad's closet.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think even with the freeze gun, they were not allowed to have a gun pointing at the TV screen, which is a weird rule. Like,
yeah. That's interesting.
Like, why?
You learn a lot of S&P rules through this. I mean, they also had the rule of, like, Catwoman falls, she can either land on her butt or chest. Like, she and yeah. and Batman cannot get have in contact a punch landing. It's also why they kind of break that in this episode, but only because it does nothing to Mr. Freeze. But
great sound effect yeah. when he pops him on the dome. He goes like dunk. It's such a good sound.
But if you can recall any fight scene from, say, Batman the Animated Series or Superman, when a punch lands, there's a flash of
white.
A big white
flash. That's one of the things in the edited version of Return of the Joker. Mm. There are a bunch of flashes. The unedited, they take them all out. Mm. He clocks dudes.
Yeah.
He does a behind-the-back punch to a guy. We don't see the punch. We see his fist up in the air and the guy falling down. Yeah. So I think the action of the punch cannot be shown, but like the result can be shown, or like a shadow yeah. can be shown.
They talk about that in the oral history article I read, too, that they said, well, okay, you can show guns, but we got rules. You can't really have Batman punch, but you can suggest it. And Paul Dini was like, oh, okay, here's a scene. You're going to hear a guy scream in an alleyway and then fall down after Batman jumps on him, but it's not on screen. And they're like, I guess you got around us here, but this actually made me imagine something way worse.
And yeah. I think eventually they weren't allowed to show broken glass, and there's plenty of broken glass in this episode, I will say.
Yeah. It's a kid show on a kid network. I get it. There has to be somebody to say kids shouldn't see this. I don't want to say, like, these evil censors ruining my Batman cartoons, but them having to work under the censor conditions was great. They also tell a story on another one about how they would, when they would submit a script to Standards and Practices, they would front load it with shit that they thought, this will never be animated. So then when they cut this out, the things they did want animated seemed a lot more tame.
That's the oldest trick in the book.
Yeah,
and I love it.
They also mentioned on the first Harley and Ivy episode, they got away with Joker saying, aren't you a busy little beaver?
Mm.
And that they were just like, no, we got to cut it ourselves. They're going to get mad after this airs.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I said it before on this episode, but the Batman going, my God, was cut out of reruns on other networks. Like,
saying, like Kids WB?
Like Kids WB or
Cartoon
like,
Network.
Yeah, those. And in fact, like saying God on a cartoon, that was kind of shocking in 1992.
Yeah.
Implying a character could die or be murdered or say the word kill. Like, these are all big things for a cartoon of this era.
Send him to the next dimension.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, meanwhile, kids should be learning about God from Batman. That's why they were in so much trouble in our schools. Not enough prayer.
They're
That's
okay.
why I love Bible Man.
I can see their parachutes.
So I love that the first and third act open with snow, and it is Batman coming to see the snow, and gets quite a soliloquy from Mr. Freeze as they establish all the rest of the information about
yeah,
him.
Yeah, this is one of three choke up Bob Mackie moments.
The snow is beautiful, don't you think? Clean, uncompromising,
and cold.
Like the swift hand of vengeance.
I saw what happened to your wife. I'm sorry.
I'm beyond emotions. They've been frozen dead in me.
So yeah, like Batman, he gets revenge.
Yeah.
He's on board with revenge, but not the way he's doing it. And it's then you hear the like, I'm technically dead inside. It's like, no, I'm just burying my emotions because yes. of this horrible thing that's happened to me.
Yeah, he just can't deal with it. But Batman also has to say things like, oh, so that's why you have to be an absolute zero. And it's lame exposition made better by Mr. Freeze saying, like, a detective to the last.
Yeah.
And just his speech is like, snow is beautiful. It's like, oh, man, we got a monologue here for this guy. This guy's like, I feel nothing. Now a speech about snow.
Like, a spotlight should switch on whenever he starts talking. Like, chunk.
And it's too hot. And he's like, no. That's no.
I said no spotlight.
That's a great tete-a-tete, like, back and forth, where, like, they one up each other three or four lines in a row. And then Batman has to finally be like, I know what happened to your wife.
And Batman, yes, like, yeah. apologizing on behalf of Boyle. It's like, that was a powerful moment for me.
Late-stage capitalism, what do you want?
It was wrong what happened to you. I recognize your feelings. I am Batman. Mm-hmm. And also the line, the line about, like, I'd kill for that.
Tonight I mean to pay back the man who ruined my life. Our lives.
Even if you have to kill everyone in the building to do it.
Think of it, Batman. To never again walk on a summer's day with a hot wind in your face and a warm hand to hold. Oh, yes. I'd kill for that.
That is saying, how is he so angry? Well, imagine if you would never feel warm ever again.
Yeah. Mm. And the, just the moral complexity of Batman and Mr. Freeze. Again, this sounds ridiculous now, me saying this. But in 1992, having a hero show up and be like, I understand why you're upset. Like, and I'm sorry what happened to you. That was, like, unheard of.
Yeah.
It would have been like, I'll stop you, Mr. Freeze, in, like, 10 years ago.
Even in grown-up shows.
Yeah.
The Flash show, the one that had Mark Hamill on it, like, that show didn't have this kind of stuff in it.
No way. Moral complexity was boring. You know? Kids want to see action.
Not until Smallville did we get a great adult comic book show.
Yeah. Nope. But Mr. Freeze, though, is a very inexperienced Batman villain. He does know to take away his utility belt, which on Batman the Animated Series is death trap rule number one. Take away that utility belt. Like, it happens every time almost. But, well, time to leave him. Like, I'll leave you to die, Bat. Well, actually, I think he doesn't want to kill Batman. He's like, look, I'm just leaving you here. Maybe freeze to death, maybe you don't. I got plans.
It's like, just stop getting in the way.
Yeah. Though Batman frees himself, like, he does it so soon as they leave. I wish they had inserted a scene to show time lapse, because otherwise it's like one henchman should have turned around and be like, hey, Batman's swinging around there. He's about free to Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, after Freeze leaves, Batman's like, well, it's time for me to go.
What's he doing? Crunches? No, he keeps healthy. That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, he's out. We gotta get him.
He's doing some great, like, upper body stuff, man. He's working on his core.
Yeah.
So this next clip of the arrival of Mr. Freeze with his death ray, I only got it because this is a lesson they learned after the first season. Kevin Conroy should not do incidental voices.
Oh, it's weird.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keys?
Yeah, the valet wants the park car. And one of the three jokes in this entire episode.
Yeah, it's not my favorite, but it's something they did in multiple season one episodes of. It is a money saver, because I believe I heard this on one of these Superman animated series episodes that rules-wise in their contracts, they could get you to do one main voice and up to two incidental voices. So if it was just a one-off line, they're like, well, I mean, we still have Malcolm McDowell. Yeah. I mean, just have him say this line. Or the voice of Brainiac. So they do that kind of stuff in the first seasons, but I think they realize, in the very least, when it's your lead character of Batman, his voice is so recognizable, it's just distracting. Like, why does this valet sound like Bruce?
Is that
like
Bruce Batman in disguise?
But no, Batman is at his lowest. I just love that, like, Batman doesn't get time to cough. He's like, my legs are still kind of frozen. Cough, cough. Ah, shit. And he has to get back in action. That is a hero, man. Mm-hmm. And this viewing, too, was the first time I realized Batman throws that icicle to stop the machine because he has no batarangs, because he doesn't have his belt.
That's right. They have his belt on the machine, the giant cannon. So Freeze's plan is he's going to freeze the entire building to kill Boyle. I thought he would be a little more direct than that. He hates the one guy.
Yeah, but he's killing everyone in that building.
Like, humanity failed me. Fuck them all.
Yeah, he's gone to ridiculous supervillainy at this point from regular old villainy. And when Batman stops it, his arrival is great. I love a great Batman descending shot. It's beautiful.
Just the bat symbol coming at you.
Yes. Though, one mistake in this episode.
Oh, no.
There are like three frames of an inverted bat symbol after he lands. After he stops the machine, he turns. Like, that was almost that. You get that about once an episode in Super Friends. You didn't get it that much in this show, but
they recently did a Teen Titans Go episode that was animated like a Filmation, like a Super Friends cartoon, and they fill it full of that stuff.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Characters like legs walk away without them, and those jokes. So many people are colored wrong.
Well, also I like the animation. Though, speaking of good animation, the animation of Mr. Freeze propelling himself into the building off of freezing the hydrant is great.
I like how matter-of-factly just like, well, here we go, kick this open, stick my gun in, and we're done.
I am not giving up.
Yeah.
And Batman gets back his belt, because he will need it for the next scene. But Mr. Freeze arrives just as Ferris Boyle was getting his humanitarian award.
The cold eyes of vengeance are upon you, Boyle.
Are you?
Come now. Surely you remember your old colleague, Victor Freeze.
No! No! Stop! Please! Beg you!
You beg? In my nightmares, I see my Nora behind the glass, begging to me with frozen eyes. How I've longed to see that look frozen on you.
Awesome. Again, he's so melodramatic and theatrical, but he's not ridiculous. I love him so much.
He's just been thinking of this day forever when he's finally going to murder Barris Boyle. It's
I love beautiful. Any sentence that starts off with, in my nightmares.
You beg. It's beautiful. And this was something, too, that really wasn't in the comic books. Mr. Freeze is not physically Batman's equal in those because, again, he's a guy in a red and green suit. He's a loser. Mm-hmm. But in this, no, he's pretty much a cyborg and stronger than Batman.
He's
Batman,
got an Iron Man suit on.
Batman physically can't do shit to him. Mm-hmm. It's great. And then he's like, this is three times. But he's not a fighter. Batman fights better than him, but then eventually he's like, well, I caught your foot. Like, you kicked me again. I'm going to just grab it.
He's more of a brick hit house.
Exactly. Yeah. And the but then house. Batman then saves the day in honestly kind of a corny comic book way, but I like it.
You're talking about the soup?
Yes.
And the soup is still hot.
That somehow collapsed in his thermos full of soup fits in his utility belt.
I think it's tied to the back.
Sure.
That's a good thermos, though.
Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, all who stand in my way must feel the icy touch of death.
That stuff.
The only way to fight a cold.
Man, that labored breathing is painful.
Yeah, it's like, his wheezing is beautiful. As Mr. Freeze would learn in later appearances, like, I should have a tougher helmet. This helmet, if this is my one weakness, I should probably make it tougher.
Maybe it'll make the whole thing glass.
Yes.
Yeah.
In one of the comics, Batman straight up tries to blow up his helmet, and Mr. Freeze is like, I have a diamond helmet.
he just wanted to look cool.
Yeah. And this Mr. Freeze is also very present in the Arkham games as well, because the Arkham games are a real takeoff.
Oh,
of
yeah.
His, and
that's why I love them.
It's the more grown-up version, and Dini also worked on those.
And one of the best parts of all of the Arkham trilogy, well, quadrilogy, sorta, but of the games, my favorite is the Mr. Freeze fight, because you can beat him, like, you have to hit him three times, and you have like 20 different ways you can do it.
It's very Metal Gear boss fight.
He's like walking in circles, walking around that room, right?
And yeah, and giving speeches and like this too, except it's not Michael Ansara because he was alive, but he's pretty much retired by that point. Yeah. Batman still does right by Freeze, even though he won't let him murder Ferris Boyle.
Can't end this way. Vengeance.
No. Justice. A year ago, Ferris Boyle interrupted an experiment, and in the process destroyed two lives. Here's the evidence. Good night, humanitarian.
Boom.
Again, the moral complexity of this quote-unquote kid show, where it's like, Batman's like, I defeated a villain, but I'm going to help him because I understand good revenge.
This is justice and things being done right, not murder out of personal vendetta. And he helps him, and that also shows why Batman is not torn apart in the same way as Freeze is, too. Mm-hmm. I would like to think Ferris paid his dues and went to jail for that, but I would also think he probably tied it up in the courts for a long time.
He settled out of court.
Yeah, he settled out of court.
While recovering from his waist down for a freezer burn.
This will never work again.
I'm guessing Batman had to throw him in the back to tank that.
Come with me first, then we'll arrest you.
Yes. Yeah. I would hope his dick never worked again, at least.
That's exactly what I was thinking, not to get too crude, when Freeze is really laying it on his crotch.
Just for like 30 seconds, it's pointing right at his dick.
So then
stop it.
We get one more scene that also was straight up ripped off for Batman and Robin, but done way better on this. Batman has built a special cold room in Arkham Asylum, and as happens in so many episodes, we end with our villain there.
This fucking kills me.
I failed you. I wish there were another way for me to say it. But I cannot. I can only beg your forgiveness and pray you hear me somehow. Someplace. Someplace where a warm hand waits for mine.
It closes like it opens.
Yeah.
But then the Nora's theme, if that's what that song is, it eventually turns into like a more triumphant Batman-y thing when you see Batman, who's still like kind of looking out for Mr. Freeze. Like, they're having a moment.
That's original instrumentation there, too. It's so perfect. And yeah, there's so many Batman episodes, and it's Batman looking down on someone crazier than he is.
Yes.
Like, it's like, I got to look at this guy. Oh, and it just lets you know Batman is triumphant. Good one, but is it truly a happy ending? Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm a broken man, and this guy is way more broken than I am.
Yes.
But this ending, like as I said at the beginning of this podcast, it floored me as a child. I don't think I was crying or anything like as I do as a grown man. But I was just like, oh my God. This episode could have ended with Batman and Alfred going, you know, Alfred, that chicken soup really did the trick.
Exactly.
For the soul.
Yes. Or a speech like, Freeze learned one thing, that vengeance must be replaced with justice. Dun, 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 dun. No, we end with a man crying over his dead wife. At the end of a kid's cartoon.
Crying snowy tears.
Yes, it still blows my mind, and it still got me choked up. Even hearing the audio, it's so well done.
Yeah, such a great episode. I'm glad we did this as our first one on What a Cartoon.
Oh yeah,
I love Batman so much, and this is, I wouldn't call it exactly my all-time favorite Batman animated series episode, but it maybe is the best. It's the first one I would show anybody who hasn't seen BTS.
Definitely
before.
It's the most solid piece. Like, if you're showing it to someone's like, what's the big deal with this show? Like, if you play this episode, they're like, oh, okay. I get it.
So thank you for listening to What a Cartoon, and I can remind you again, this is the first episode and the rest will be free, but if you go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, we have the second episode waiting there for you right now, and it's about a King of the Hill episode.
Woo!
So we're jumping all around, we're doing all kinds of stuff, we're doing anime, we're doing all kinds of cartoons. If you go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, you can get every episode a week ahead of time and ad free, and all of our other amazing stuff. Henry, please tell everybody. You're really good at this. That's
yes,
why I keep referring to you.
So patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, there's every episode of Talking Simpsons a week early and ad free, our entire first season exclusively there, our entire Talking Critic where we go through every episode of The Critic. We have our new show starting on Friday of the week of the day you're hearing this. It is the Talking Futurama, where you go through every episode of the first season of Futurama and a ton of exclusive interviews, not just from folks who'd worked on The Simpsons, like Mike Scully and Bill Oakley, but also animation superstars on their own, like Ian Jones-Cordy, the creator of OKKO, which I would absolutely love to do at least one episode of that show on this as well. There's so many awesome things and more stuff coming. Just $5 a month gets you access to it. Check it out, please. I beg of you. Patreon.com/Talking Simpsons.
And after episode one of Talking Futurama, the rest can only be found on Patreon. So please, if you love the show, please donate. We give you so many podcasts for just $5 a month. And as for me, I've been your host, Bob Mackey. Find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. If you want to look up that's at retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. We are a classic gaming podcast. We've been going on since 2006. I can't believe podcasts existed back then, but they did. So yeah, just check it out. I think you'll like it if you like my voice. Matthew, you're a special guest.
I am on Twitter at Mr. Matt J. I'm also at Disney 80s 90s, Disney 80s 90s, where I post cool things from the Disney company from the 80s and 90s, which if you're a stinking millennial like me, you might think is the best period for the company in their almost a century of existing.
I'm an elder millennial, and I agree.
I love everything from that time period, and we probably talked about a bunch of stuff in podcasts I've done with you guys recently that's from that time period, from like DuckTales or Gummy Bears or whatever. But I also make the YouTube show Cartoons 101, which you can find at youtube.com/cartoons101, where I talk about whatever cartoon topic I feel like talking about when I make a video. It's been on hiatus for a little while, but it's coming back real soon, so let me know in the comments if you think there's something I want to cover. I've done topics like I did a three-part series on Steven Spielberg's work in animation, which was born out of the same place that gave us this show.
It was
Tiny Toons, we mentioned many times this episode, which was produced by him.
That was a good video.
Thank you. I also have a video about my first one ever, which was featured on the AV Club, which is about the history of Robin Williams voicing the genie, how they got him, how they lost him, how they got him back, and what he made them do to for him to come back and voice the character. And just, again, you know, tweet at me. Let me know what topics you'd like to see covered. I love all cartoons. Oh, nah, you know. I think all
cartoons, really.
All cartoons are valid. Yes. How about that?
Yes, that's our motto on this show. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week for an episode of King of the Hill. But remember, if you go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, you can hear it right goddamn now. But thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Hot bath yourself.